Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
This is Issues 2020. I'm Steve McIntosh, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stoles. Welcome to Issues 2020.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Good to have you with us. Let's start off with something topical. Okay. Where are we in the county right now on closing the bars and the nightclubs? What's happening right now?
So Dr. Mins issued an order within the last couple of days, and then yesterday the commission took action to approve that order with some amendments to it. So we are processing through that today. But in essence, any nightclub in the city that does not have a restaurant status effective tonight will have to close. Those that have restaurant status will be allowed to stay open. And one of the amendments that the commission made yesterday was to allow them to stay open until 2 a.m. if that's what they chose to do. Dr. Mins had in his order originally that they were to close at midnight. So we're processing through that today. We're getting a list of all of those entities who, by his order, will have to close and who can remain open. And we are working with the City of Wichita on their licensing information so that we can give proper notification to all those businesses.
And, of course, we should add that we are recording this conversation on a Thursday. And now, what about the duration of this close down for the bars and restaurants, or bars and nightclubs? It's going to be shorter than what he asked for, right?
Correct. One of the amendments that the commission made yesterday, Dr. Mins had suggested this go till September 9, and the commission body yesterday wanted it to go for 4 weeks, so it comes down August 20th or 21st. So it's 4 weeks from date of when we stand it up. And then they also, the commission wanted the numbers, and when I talk about the numbers, the COVID virus numbers that we all look at every week, they wanted that reviewed weekly, and to where adjustments or decisions could be made on this order based on the activity of the virus.
And there's something being done about possibly about compensation for those restaurant or club owners who are going to be hit by this?
So, yeah, commissioners yesterday wanted us to review options under CARES funding to target these businesses which were being mandated to close down by this order, what would be allowed by federal treasury rules and guidelines. And we'll bring it back to them after analysis. We'll bring it back to them next Wednesday at our next BOCC meeting and give them options of what is allowed and what is not allowed, and they'll make a decision based on that.
Now, how are you personally dealing with this COVID pandemic?
Well, I don't think, but last time we talked, Steve, nobody signed up for this. None of our commissioners did. None of our staff did. As trying and taxing a time as I've ever gone through, and I was in the police department for 30 years, and we had stressful situations and times, but nothing even close to this. So it's trying and taxing on all of us. And when people get tried and taxed, they're a little shorter fuse on them. They're a little bit crankier. And it's just every day is a battle to reaffirm that we all need to try to be kind to one another, get along, and be patient with one another, recognizing that, like the health department, emergency management, those entities are overtaxed right now. They're just overrun with the amount of business that this virus is bringing in the door. So we have to shift back. We have to be methodical. We have to be patient. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Just live by those kinds of rules every day, and you try to get through to the next day.
So the battlefield is in the counties. Sedgwick County taking a leading role in dealing with the pandemic. Tell us about the county health officers who are helping you run this show.
Well, county health is any public health department, and this is a phenomenon around the country. Nobody really even knows they exist until you need them, until there's a measles outbreak or a mumps outbreak, or in the worst case scenario, which is what we're going through now, basically a pandemic, and not just a state or county or national pandemic, a worldwide pandemic. So you try to staff government staffing at a level which in a normal time serves the needs of the people. And that way you have the minimum amount of government, the minimum amount of expense for taxpayers to shoulder, and that's how you go through your budget years. Well, when something like this all of a sudden happens, and this thing hit us like a tsunami back in February and March, I think if anybody wants to go out and say that they predicted exactly how this was going to go, I think they're being disingenuous. We really were stunned by how fast this moved, the breadth and scope and the psychology of how this affected our country. And now all of a sudden the health department is in a laser target of this thing. And you try to move the needle on the fly. So we try to add staff. We try to put new equipment up there. We're trying to move this on the fly, and it's difficult because it's you just can't train people up in a day and a half to do the kind of work that they're doing. So what you ask for in the stopgap is for your people, your incumbent people, to go above and beyond. I know people over there who have not had a day off in 3 months, not a single day. That includes weekends. I have finance staff here. You would think that's what would finance have to do with coronavirus? Well, we're trying to manage and acquire and ascertain equipment and materials and people, and so that it stresses them. I know finance staff. My CFO has not had a day off in weeks. So the people are, and they don't do it for the money, Steve. They do it because they love the community. They do it because they're devoted to their craft, and they're doing the best they can. And we'll get through this. I've said many times before, we'll get through it. I think there's some lights at the end of the tunnel that we really need to focus on as we make decisions about how we live the next 3-4 months till the end of the year. And our health staff will be there to support us. I know they will.
It seems to me, at least, that the key or one of the keys to this battle is testing. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. Is testing adequate right now?
No, it's not. And that's, we have struggled in Kansas and in Sedgwick County with testing since the onset. The original problem was we couldn't get any commodities. We were testing 30, 40, 50 people a day if we were lucky. And then as those commodities began to free up, now what's happened is in the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've seen this spike of infections and the system is borderline overwhelmed, not only on a local level, but on a national level. So in Sedgwick County, when we take a sample from a citizen, we have to ship that. It has to go somewhere. We do not have a local lab capacity in Wichita, Sedgwick County to process our results, not at least in the public health arena. Some of the private offices and maybe the hospitals do, but in the public health arena, we don't have that capacity. So when we ship those to external labs, and we're doing business with a couple of national labs, and you have the four most populous states in the country being overrun by this thing right now, the results take longer. And so we're seeing by the time we get people scheduled for a sample, they give a sample, we curry it, they take a number of days to test it, it curries back, and we get results to people. You know, now we're talking 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 days, and that's just not good enough. It's not good enough to, I mean, it's better than nothing, but it's not the kind of results that allow us to keep kids in schools and to keep people on the jobs where they work. It's just not good enough. So in our CARES money that we are managing, we have allocated 25% of that entire pot is for rapid testing. And so next week on July 29, the commission will hear some options for rapid testing solution for Sedgwick County, Kansas. And there's a couple of options out there that will roll. One of the things we're doing is we're acquiring a couple of rapid test machines for our health department, which will give us capacity to get results spun around here instantaneously. The problem with that is there's a line of people that want to do the same thing, so we have to wait on the actual machine to be manufactured, produced, shipped, and set up. So, and then the other part of it is we have to automate how we do business on the front and back ends. Telephone calling is how we've always worked in the health department. You telephone call to make an appointment. We telephone call you with your results back at the end. And in today's society, telephone calling is cumbersome. People don't answer. We miss one another. We play the callback game. We've all done that just in our everyday life. Well, that takes time in this kind of system. So we need to automate how people can schedule themselves for appointments. We need to automate how they get results on a back end where it's not reliant on a telephone call. They can get online or get on their smartphone, and they're given a code number, and they can go through the list and find their tests. So we're looking at automation of this entire system and trying to stand that up in conjunction with the rapid test methodology, because even if we have rapid testing and we can't process it on the front and back end, it's still not going to do us good. So we have both these trains going down track at the same time.
So how has the pandemic impacted county employees? Any positive tests down there?
We're like any other business. Yes, we've had some of our emergency responders are testing positive. Some of our line staff, we're just part of society. And just like any other employer that has, you know, 2,500, 2,700 people, you're going to get some tests. So, and we quarantine, and we're doing the same rules that every other company's going through. We're testing, we're waiting on our test just like everybody else is, and we're quarantining as best we can and trying to manage through this and yet stay open. So we definitely, if people don't understand or they don't think we understand the stress, we surely do, because we're an organization as well.
You're listening to Issues 2020 on the Entercom radio stations, and our guest is Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stoles. Well, Tom, a tough time for workers and businesses, lost tax revenue for local government. How big is that impact on Sedgwick County as you finalize that budget just within the next few days or so?
Right. Well, you know, part of the phenomena of the coronavirus and this whole issue is, well, you hear people say a lot of times, we just don't know. We talk a lot to doctors and we talk a lot to medical professionals about trying to predict what's going to happen, and they'll tell you, we're so new into this, and a virus has only been in our country for 6 months, so we just don't know. And it's the same kind of answer when you start looking at and trying to project budgets. We just don't know the impact that this is going to have on our economy. We're seeing early signs it's bad, particularly when you look at Wichita-Sedgwick County and our reliance on aircraft industry, and we're seeing the destruction that this virus is causing that industry and other industries. So we don't know the impact. When we budget and when we plan in government, we always use worst-case scenario. So we're rolling out our 21 budget. It's flat, even though costs continue to go up. We've made certain sacrifices organizationally, you know, no pay raises for employees and things of those of that nature, which doesn't make us special. It just puts us in line with what the rest of the community is going through to try to get through 21, and then we're anticipating a large deficit for 2022. So Then you tactically have to look at organizationally what services you provide, what can we maybe stop providing and begin to cut back on expenses, because we know that this is not going to be a one-year phenomenon. At least we don't expect it to be. So we're being very cautious with expenditures. We're managing very tightly. We're trying to be very lean. City manager and I have talked a lot about, is there things we can combine? Is there things we can do more efficiently to save money? And that discussion will go on for months. But as we, you know, we live a year at a time, so our 21 budget's not terrible. I think we can continue our service provisions as people are accustomed. Same number of EMS workers, same number of fire workers, same amount of road work going on, same kinds of services they are used to when they come into this building or that we provide out there. But 2022 is going to be a challenge, so we're having a lot of discussions moving forward.
Well, you were with the Wichita Police Department for 30 years. I want to change the tone just a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, maybe you don't want to give me a comment on this, what do you think of the WPD's handling of the racial injustice protests we had locally?
Well, I think our police department here is, you know, we're very lucky in Sedgwick County, very blessed. We have good law enforcement, and that WPD, our sheriff's office, our district attorney, these are top-notch, really good people, just good-hearted people. They want to do what's best for citizens. Everybody's struggling with the racial injustice topic differently. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer, except one of the answers that's not acceptable is we're not going to do anything. Everybody knows we have to do something. And our people, Sheriff Easter, Mark Bennett, our district attorney, Gordon Ramsey, our Wichita chief, they are all willing to listen. They are all willing to learn and get better. None of them are, inflexible, like, no, we know what we're doing and we're the experts, so we're not going to talk to anybody. None of them have that attitude. They're all really good people. So I think that they're handling it correctly. Chief Ramsey is an advocate of education, so is the sheriff. We try to dialogue, we try to have meaningful conversations and educate one another on what our challenges are, and then we try to come to a solution that is the best. And I think we're going through that. We'll continue to go through it, and I think we're very blessed in Sedgwick County to have leaders that we do in law enforcement.
But, you know, for several years, we've been talking, and I've talked to the police chiefs going back a ways, but there's been talk about improving what we call a community policing, getting out there and getting to know people. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that that's kind of, and you were there, I mean, it seems to me it's kind of paying off, at least this time around.
Well, you know, community policing, I'm old enough. I was there at the beginning of the whole community policing discussion. That was 1990 and 91, 92. And, you know, we rolled that out early in the 90s. But honestly, before you get the fruits of that result, you have to go a generation. When you change police culture or law enforcement culture or government culture in general, you don't reap the benefits of that day. You reap the benefits of that 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 years down the road. And by the same token, when you do bad things, when you back away, which after 9/11, honestly, Steve, law enforcement kind of got redirected. You know, there's a lot of talk about how police got militarized today. And if you look at 9/11 was a watershed event for this country, and it began to move the law enforcement away from the community-mindedness that we were advocating in the 90s, more to a hunker down and let's do battle with terrorists mentality. And we're coming back full circle again, and we understand that it really comes down to human relationships out in the community amongst people, and that is that's why I was a strong advocate for community policing in the early 90s. I was dismayed a little bit when we backed away from it after 9/11, and you didn't see the results of that. You had to wait a generation, and then we saw the results of what happens when you lose that connectivity with the community. And now we have to try to get it back. We're aspiring to get it back, and it's going to be a long haul, because the changes that Chief Ramsey or the sheriff make today, they're not going to realize the benefits of that for a couple, 3 years. But we have to get going down the right path so that we're not having this exact same conversation in 5 or 10 years, or hopefully in 20 years, we turn a corner and we do what's right.
You just gave some excellent perspective on this thing of militarizing the police, getting the big trucks or the, whatever you call these big tank-looking things out and putting all the helmets and so that really came about right about 9/11. That makes sense. The police kind of changed.
Yeah. It was a shift in that, and honestly, if you just look at federal dollars and how they flow, in the 90s, there was federal dollars flowing to community policing so that we could stand this kind of model up, and then the federal dollars after 9/11 began to flow for equipment and more sophisticated counterterrorism types of equipment, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The world's a dangerous place right now, even in our streets in America. You don't have to look very far to see what's going on with some violence. It's a dangerous place out there, but there is a happy medium between relationships with police officers and their citizens and the ability to shift gears when something really bad happens or we get a really bad actor within the community. There's a fine line that we have to negotiate there, and that's why police work and is so challenging, because you have to be able to do both those things well.
Are we getting adequate training right now for the officers, do you think?
Oh, I think the base training is very good. The Kansas Law Enforcement Training Center in Hutch trains the state officers. WPD and the sheriff have their own academy here. I think our base training is very good. And I think our community and our ability to work with mental illness and our ability to communicate with all kinds of population pockets, I think that's good training. It can always get better. And I think what we need to do is listen very carefully to the community right now of what they desire and how they want to be policed, because that's what drives the train is not what police chiefs think, it's what their citizens think. And I know Gordon is a good listener, and his staff they're good at listening, and I think they'll improve their training in the future. The sheriff's wide open to suggestions on how he runs his field crew and how he runs his jail staff. So we need to listen very carefully. We need to make these changes. It needs to be planned and strategized and thought out, and then we need to do what our community wants us to do.
Sounds to me like your professional life right now is putting out fires, big fires, constantly. Do you have any time to think and envision about the future of the county when some of this stuff maybe someday kind of dies down a little bit?
Yeah, and that's part of the struggle right now. I'm a planner by nature. I like to think one step ahead, and I like to be methodical and meticulous about how we move forward. And when you face crisis every day, which you're describing that exactly correctly, the last 3 or 4 months is just basically one crisis after another. It cuts away from your ability to plan and think rationally about the future. And we need to get back to that. But so, that's how you end up working 80 hours a week, because you have to do some of that yet. You have to strategize and plan for the future. But it's tough when you're under constant crisis. And I look forward to the day, and I keep telling people, look forward to the day when they roll these vaxes out and there's some relief from COVID. And even though we know that even when they roll vaxes out, we're still going to be, battling COVID-19. It's not going to just disappear into the mist. But I look forward to that day when we can at least get back to a more normal operation of business in this community. We can get our aircraft flying again. We get people back on planes and traveling, because that will then allow us to begin to do long-term planning in government and in our business world like we all prefer.
It'd be a real good thing if we get that 737 MAX thing taken care of. That'll be a step in the right direction.
Well, that was a problem we had. That's pre-COVID. Yeah. We were trying to work our way through that, and then we got the double deal going with COVID on top of that. So I have a lot of admiration for the aircraft people in this community, and they're trying to battle through this and maintain a workforce, and it's tough. It's just, but when you lose 96% of your flying patrons out there, it's just tough right now for a lot of us, but specifically aircraft and any industry that deals with entertainment right now is really struggling.
All right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us. And, you know, it is kind of hard to keep our mood up in it day to day dealing with all this. Of course, we just talk about it on the radio, but you actually have to live in the trenches. So I'd like to just say thank you for all you're doing and the city and all the government employees are doing to try to keep this thing, at least some sanity in this thing. And we appreciate it. Thanks for your thanks for your efforts there. All right.
Thanks for your time, Steve. Appreciate it.
It's always good to talk to you, Tom. And I guess you're probably not ready to retire, not while the fight's still going on. Huh? Okay.
All right.
That's all for this edition of Issues 2020. Our guest this week has been Sedgwick County Manager Tom Stolz, talking about all the stuff going on with the pandemic and so forth. And we're going to be back next week, another edition of Issues 2020 next week. And we thank you for listening. I'm Steve McIntosh.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.